Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're setting our sights on autonomous vehicles and digesting the findings of a recent UBS Evidence Lab Q-Series report on the theme entitled Who Will Win the Race to Autonomous Cars? The lead author of the report will join us for an extended interview in which he'll discuss who is likely to win in the world of AV, explain how the bank conducted its research, and talk us through a raft of key conclusions on the theme that can and should help shape decision-making by investors going forward. Let's start with that lead author, Patrick Hummel, analyst on the UBS Evidence Lab piece that posed this question. Patrick, give us a sense of what you and your colleagues who worked on this very interesting, very in-depth piece were really seeking to document with your work.
The main purpose of that report was to really find out who's best positioned to win the race to autonomous vehicles. It's clear that autonomous vehicles are a huge opportunity for various players coming from various industries. Our base case scenario for 2030 is basically that the market for autonomous vehicles and related revenue pools is as big as the global car market today. So basically, the individual mobility pool doubles in size potentially with a 2030 view. And that's still the tip of the iceberg, because in our base case, we just assume that we will have about 25 million robo-taxis, meaning fully autonomous taxis, globally on the road, which is equivalent to about 1.5% of the global car park by then. So it's still a very early stage of adoption. Nonetheless, it is an enormous opportunity. And with that report, we obviously wanted to do the deep dive and see who's really best positioned to benefit from that. As a part of that exercise, we interviewed 22 experts from all over the autonomous vehicle ecosystem, including artificial intelligence specialists, tech and auto companies, people from academia. So a very wide spectrum from all the relevant markets, North America, Europe, Asia. And well, the outcome is this report. One of the key findings of the report was obviously that Waymo, meaning Google's self-driving car project, that's how it was labeled previously, is by a significant margin the leading player from today's perspective. And one key finding related to that is that acting out of the position of owning the brain of the autonomous vehicle is actually putting you in a position of strength as a player to expand into other autonomous vehicle-related revenue pools. And it's exactly this part, the brain of the autonomous car, that Waymo is most advanced on.
Well, yeah, and that's really interesting, because Waymo, not only, as you say, is the Google Waymo, it was found one of the sort of really arresting conclusions was their likely dominance in terms of the sort of AV operating system globally. But also, you talk about how to play the theme in the series as well.
Yeah.
How does that follow? Is it just looking to the investment case of Alphabet, the parent company, then?
Well, of course, Alphabet is the way to play Waymo's lead in autonomous driving. Actually, also to our surprise, we looked at the various revenue pools in great detail. For example, a robotaxi service business model, monetizing the time in the car spent. And I said to our surprise that 2030 revenue opportunity for Waymo or for Alphabet Holding could be equivalent to 80% of the expected Alphabet Group revenue with a 2020 view. So this can be really, really material to the Alphabet investment case. Therefore, Waymo can definitely move the needle.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other potential sort of beneficiaries of some of this. Now, we've spoken before, I think, Patrick, about the companies and areas that are best positioned to take advantage of developments, you know, whether we're talking about semiconductors, this sort of thing. How does that break down in terms of where there are other great areas of opportunity that are pegged to the rise in autonomous vehicles?
Indeed, the hardware part of the story, meaning semiconductors and sensors, is a significant growth area. It's clear that autonomous vehicles will have a variety of sensors and several units of each sensor type, so that there is a great content growth opportunity for those players. We are actually more bullish on the semiconductor-related part, because there you have leading players which are used to operate in a highly innovative and cost deflationary environment. On the compute semi side, we're highlighting Intel and NVIDIA as the leaders related to autonomous driving. And on the sensor semiconductor side, we're highlighting Infineon in our European tech coverage. On the traditional auto supplier side, which also basically offer the sensors, the cameras, the radar systems, etc., we're a bit more reluctant to see them as autonomous vehicle plays because it's a relatively low return business in our view, potentially dilutive to margins, with a risk of commoditization and new players from the electronics industry entering the scene. So yes, there will be growth for these companies as well, but it might very well be margin dilutive growth.
Yeah, and just to pick up on that in a bit more detail, Patrick, because often the narrative around maybe, you know, traditional auto manufacturers is that this is a problem for them. They're lagging behind. But nevertheless, it's interesting, isn't it? If we look at even, say, premium players, Daimler screens as best positioned, GM, you know, more competitive maybe than others. It would be wrong, though, wouldn't it, to look at traditional automakers and say it's just a problem here. There are gains potentially to be made, provided that they adapt in the right way.
There are definitely gains to be made. At the same time, I would definitely make the statement here that for the majority of mass automakers, autonomous vehicles are a threat because it's a threat to car sales volumes in the long term, meaning just less cars being privately owned, and therefore there's going to be a negative impact on global car sales. And B, a significant share of vehicles produced will be those autonomous vehicles, which will likely not carry the badge of the car maker anymore, but rather the badge of the mobility service provider. So the industry, in our view, is not very well positioned for a white label business model like we know it from other industries. It's not yet concentrated enough. You have probably a lot of pressure coming then from players in lower cost regions. I would expect the Chinese players to play a very strong role in this. So by no means this is an opportunity for all the car makers. I think nonetheless, if you're doing a great job in developing your autonomous vehicle brain internally, which is basically the price you have to pay as a car maker for not letting Google or Waymo into your car, and if you're a fast follower to Waymo, and we definitely see Daimler, for example, or BMW or GM in that position, then as a car maker, you have the opportunity to monetize also that autonomous vehicle opportunity. We think the entry barriers in having an app that basically brings supply and demand together of robotaxis or autonomous vehicles is relatively easy. And actually already today, Daimler is globally the car maker with the biggest mobility service business. It's the number two behind Uber in Europe. For example, it's My Taxi app. So it's not rocket science to get into that business. Also, all these autonomous vehicles, the robotaxis, need to be owned by somebody, need to be maintained, need to be cleaned, need to be charged. And we see a natural fit with the financial service units of the big car makers. You are aware they have big banks, the asset managers and the fleet managers for robotaxis. And that's another interesting revenue pool. And car makers who do have the balance sheet capability are, I think, in a very strong starting position to benefit from that.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, you reflected on robotaxis several times, and you mentioned Uber there. It's interesting, there's another one of these key conclusions, Patrick, about the current leaders in sort of ride-on-demand services not necessarily being the natural winners in the robotaxi space, even though I guess to some degree that would be the intuitive thought. Tell us why it doesn't necessarily follow that the ride-on-demand leaders will lead in that space.
If you think about the ride-on-demand world 1.0, basically the situation today, Uber or any other app provider is basically the matchmaker between millions of suppliers of vehicles with human drivers and millions of riders. So it's a very powerful position, so to say. And it's for good reason that Uber and the likes can charge 20 to 30% of each ride for themselves. That's at least what various media articles suggest. In a world of robotaxis, and that's also the takeaway from the expert interviews that we made. It's quite likely to see the emergence of regional champions. Cities, municipalities will also want to regulate the robotaxi business. In some cities, for example, in Europe, we wouldn't be surprised to see robotaxis as part of the public transport network. And that will just de-emphasize the role of the consolidator, of the matchmaking app, because you have a very concentrated supply side, so the consumer has transparency on the offering, and the role of the platform is just getting much less relevant. I think it's also for a reason that ride-on-demand players are trying to come up with their own self-driving solution, because the risk for them is really that a player like Waymo just says, why should we follow the route that we've taken in the smartphone market, i.e. roll out our technology platform, which in the smartphone world is Android, to all the hardware producers for free. They could also say, we capitalize on the technological lead that we have in autonomous driving and run our own robotaxi service. And that is something they're starting actually this year with a trial in the suburbs of Phoenix, Arizona. But they have ordered already many more vehicles from car makers, so it's clear that they will expand their fleet further. And I think the existing platform operators need to come up with convincing answers how their place in the autonomous vehicle ecosystem will eventually look like.
Patrick Hummel there. Well, there are some challenges then for the established players in automotive, as Patrick was saying. What about one such? The willingness of consumers to shift behaviours and expectations indeed, and to embrace the types of new technologies that Patrick's been telling us about. In an episode of this programme, broadcast back in March, we heard from Christian Woolmer, who's published a book entitled Driverless Cars on a Road to Nowhere. Let's hear a little reminder of Christian's specific concerns.
Protagonists of driverless cars argue, well, not only will this be safer, which I think there's no particular evidence for, because they're reliant on human technology ultimately, but they'll also end up reducing congestion. But that seems to be completely fanciful, because A, they'll still be the peak times when everybody wants to be in these cars. So just merely saying, well, 90% of the time cars just sit and are not used, and therefore people won't need to buy their cars, they'll be able to have these shared use cars. But they'll all want to come in at the same time. And then, of course, there'll be the driverless cars spinning around with nobody in them. And that will clearly add to congestion. But I do also identify in the book a absolute fundamental problem that I think is unsolvable, which is that if you stand in front of a driverless car, it has to stop, right? Law of robotics, basic Asimov's law, whatever. You can't run somebody over. And once you do that, you change the balance between pedestrians and cars, and essentially pedestrians become king of the road. Now, the driverless car people say, well, we can't have that. We have to either fence the streets off or somehow stop people from jaywalking or whatever. But more than that, the problem with it is that if you stand in front of it and you're a bad person, as Donald Trump calls them, and you want to attack the car, there's nothing to actually stop you doing that. You can just stop the car in some dark alleyway, and your mate can then get a crowbar and smash their way into it and rape and pillage. And there's no solution to that. So you'll never be able to be secure in a driverless car, so they're just not going to happen.
Christian Woolmer there, talking to this programme back in March. Now, although he's undoubtedly something of a contrarian, this question about consumer attitudes is nevertheless interesting. And Patrick Hummel, I'd like to ask you about that. If we look at this bigger picture around increasing automotive autonomy, this question around convincing consumers, we've seen setbacks in trials, accidents in autonomous driving trials, for example. The media has been very quick to seize upon, understandably so, in your view?
There has been some negative media coverage about the accidents and actually fatalities that were caused by vehicles in autonomous driving mode. You're totally right, and I'm afraid we will have more of this in the coming years. What I would like to point out, though, is that it only takes one player that gets the technology right, and you haven't heard about any such incidents from Waymo so far. If that player has a fully viable technical solution that can be rolled out in scale, let's say by 2025, then the others either are in the position of being a fast follower, or they're just going to be out of the game. And maybe some of that negative media coverage on the theme, which is caused basically by some of the players, might no longer be in the game by then. So I think we need to be careful when we talk about the technology as such, because there are players who are obviously doing a better job than others, and that shows you that the technology per se, it's of course still improving and far from being fully ready for mass adoption, but you have some players who seem to have it under control better than others. And the second point is, and we're regularly running Evidence Lab consumer surveys about that topic, and it's interesting, you have about a third the respondents in those consumer surveys who say, yeah, they would definitely be happy to try out autonomous vehicles. Another third doesn't really have a strong view. And the remaining third thinks basically, not over my dead body, I would try this. But that's, I would say, fairly typical for such a disruptive consumer product. Time will tell how quickly the adoption will happen. But of course, it's about experiencing it, beginning to trust the technology, etc. In the end, I think society will only trust the technology if it's significantly safer than a human driver. Just being at the same safety level is probably not acceptable. The robot needs to outperform the human. That will take some time. But as said, we're confident based on these interviews that by the middle of the coming decade, the leading players will be at this inflection point.
And that's Patrick Hummel bringing us to the end of this 192nd edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.